utterly forbidden. I listened to every prophecy that had ever been recorded. And so I learned that my troubles were far worse than Voldemort. From certain seers and diviners have come an increasing chorus of foretellings that this world is doomed to destruction. And you, Harry James Potter Evans Verris, are one of those foretold to destroy it. By rights, I should have ended your line of possibility, stopped you from ever being born, as I did my best to end all the other possibilities I discovered on that day of terrible awakening. Yet, in your case, Harry, and in your case alone, the prophecies of your apocalypse have loopholes, though those loopholes be ever so slight. Always he will end the world, not he will end life. Even when it was said that you would tear apart the very stars in heaven, it was not said that you would tear apart the people. And so, it being clear that this world is not meant to last, I have gambled literally everything upon you, Harry James Potter Evans Verris. There were no prophecies of how the world might be saved, so I found the prophecies that offered loopholes in the destruction, and I brought about the strange and complex conditions for those prophecies to come to pass. I ensured that Voldemort discovered a certain one of those prophecies, and so, even as I had feared, condemned your parents to death, and made you what you are. I wrote a strange hint in your mother's potion textbook, having no idea why I must, and this proved to show Lily how to help her sister, and ensured you would gain Petunia Evans's heartfelt love. I snuck invisibly into your bedroom in Oxford and administered the potion that is given to students with time-turners to extend your day's cycle by 2 hours. When you were 6 years old, I smashed a rock that was on your windowsill, and to this day I cannot imagine why. All in the desperate hope that you can pass us through the eye of the storm, somehow end this world, and yet bring out its people alive. Now that you have passed the preliminary test of defeating Voldemort, I place my all in your hands, all the tools I can possibly give you. The line of Merlin unbroken, the command of the Order of the Phoenix, all my wealth and all my treasures, the Elder Wand out of the Deathly Hallows, the loyalty of such of my friends as may heed me. I have left Hogwarts in Minerva's care, for I do not think you will have time for it. But even that is yours if you demand it from her. One thing I do not give you, and that is the prophecies. Upon the moment of my departure, they will be destroyed, and no future ones will be recorded, for it was said that you must not look upon them. If you think this frustrating, Believe me when I say that even your wits cannot comprehend what frustration you have been spared. I will die, or be lost by you, or in some other way be taken from you. The prophecies are unclear, naturally, without ever once knowing what the future truly holds, or why I must do what I do. 'Tis all cryptic madness, and you are well rid of it. There can only be one king upon the chessboard. There can only be one piece whose value is beyond price. That piece is not the world. It is the world's peoples, wizard and muggle alike, goblins and house elves and all. While survives any remnant of our kind, that peace is yet in play, though the stars should die in heaven. And if that peace be lost, the game ends. Know the value of all your other pieces, and play to win. Albus.
Vanquir the Dragon, Book 4, has just gone on pre-order on Audible. The series is now complete, and if you want an idea of what it's like, listen to this.
Manion! Manion!
Yes, Your Majesty?
Manion, I heard there is a new audiobook ready for pre-order.
Yes, there is.
Well, why haven't you ordered it yet? I'm waiting to listen.
I'm trying. I'm refreshing the page every second.
Well, don't stop until you have all four of them, and I shall sit in my lava bath and listen to them all.
Will do, Your Majesty.
Harry held the parchment scroll for a long time, staring at nothing. So, there were times when the phrase, "that explains it," didn't really seem to cover it. But, nonetheless, that explained it. Absently, Harry rolled up the parchment scroll in his fist, still staring at nothing.
"What does it say?"
said Amelia Bones.
"It's a confession letter," Harry said. "Turns out, Dumbledore's the one who killed my pet rock."
"This is not a time for jokes," cried the elder witch. "Are you the true holder of the line of Merlin unbroken?"
"Yes,"
Harry said absently, his mind occupied with thoughts that were, by any objective quantification, overwhelmingly more important. The old witch was sitting very still in her chair. She turned her head and locked eyes with Minerva McGonagall. Meanwhile, Harry's brain, which was juggling way too many possibilities over way too many time horizons, some of them involving literally billions of years and stellar disassembly procedures, declared cognitive bankruptcy and started over.
"All right, what's the first thing I have to do to save the world? No, make it even more local. What do I have to do today? Besides figuring out what to do, that is. And I'd better not delay before looking at whatever Dumbledore left me in the Phoenix's egg room."
Harry raised his eyes from the rolled-up parchment and looked at Professor McGonagall, at Headmistress McGonagall, at Mad-Eye Moody, and at the leathery-looking old witch, as though seeing them for the first time. Though he was, in fact, seeing Amelia Bones for mostly the first time. Amelia Bones, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, whom Albus Dumbledore had thought worthy to lead the Wizengamot, at least temporarily. Her cooperation would be invaluable. Maybe necessary for whatever was headed Harry's way. Dumbledore had chosen her, and he had read prophecies Harry hadn't seen. Amelia Bones, who had thought she'd been appointed regent over the line of Merlin Unbroken and made the next chief warlock, only to find that instead the position had gone to, apparently, an 11-year-old boy.
"You will now,"
said the voice of Hufflepuff inside his head.
"You will now be polite. You will not be your usual brand of bloody idiot, because the fate of the world might just depend on it. Or not. We don't even know." "I'm terribly sorry about all this,"
Harry Potter said, then paused to see what effect, if any, this polite statement had produced.
"Minerva seems to think," the old witch said, "that you will not take offence to honest words."
Harry nodded. His Ravenclaw part wanted to include the disclaimer about that being different from people blatantly trying to push you down while crying that you were intolerant of criticism, but Hufflepuff vetoed. Whatever she had to say, Harry would hear.
"I do not wish to speak ill of the departed," the old witch said, "but since time immemorial, the line of Merlin Unbroken has been passed to those who have thoroughly demonstrated themselves to be not only good people, but wise enough to distinguish successors who are themselves good and wise. A single break anywhere along the chain, and the succession might go astray and never return. It was a mad act for Dumbledore to pass the line to you at such a young age, even having made it conditional upon your defeat of you-know-who. A tarnish upon Dumbledore's legacy, that is how it will be seen."
The old witch hesitated, her eyes still watching Harry.
"I think it's best that nobody outside this room ever learn of it."
Harry said.
"You don't think very much of Dumbledore, I take it?" "I thought," said the old witch. "Well, Albus Dumbledore was a better wizard than I, a better person than I, in more ways than I can easily count. But the man had his faults. Because, Dumbledore knew everything you just said, about me being young and how the line works. You're acting like you think Dumbledore was unaware of those facts, or just ignoring them when he made his decision. It's true that sometimes stupid people, like me, make decisions that crazy. But not Dumbledore. He was not mad."
Harry swallowed, forcing a sudden moisture away from his eyes.
"I think I'm beginning to realize Dumbledore was the only sane person in all of this. All along. The only one who was doing the right things for anything like the right reasons."
Madame Bones was cursing under her breath, low, dire imprecations that were making Minerva McGonagall twitch.
"I'm sorry,"
Harry said helplessly. Mad-Eye was grinning, the scarred face twisting up in a smile.
"Always knew Albus was up to something he never told the rest of us. Lad, you have no idea how hard it is for me not to use my eye on that scroll."
Harry quickly shoved the scroll into his moke-skin pouch.
"Alistair?"
Amelia said. The old witch's voice was rising.
"You are a man of sense. You cannot think the lad is able to fill Dumbledore's socks. Not today." "Dumbledore,"
Harry said, the name tasting strange on his tongue,
"did
make one wrong assumption when he made his decisions. He thought we'd be fighting Voldemort for years. All of us, together. He didn't know I'd vanquish Voldemort immediately. It was the right thing for me to do. It saved a lot of lives compared to fighting a long battle. But Dumbledore thought you would have years to learn me. Trust me. And instead, it was all over in an evening.
Harry inhaled.
Can't you just pretend we've been fighting Voldemort for years and I earned your trust and everything? So that I'm not penalized for winning more quickly than Dumbledore expected. You are still a first year in Hogwarts,
the old witch said.
You cannot take Dumbledore's place, whatever his intentions. Right, that whole looking like an 11-year-old thing.
Harry's hand came up, rubbed at his nose where his glasses lay.
I suppose I could just use the stone, change myself to look like 90. I am not a fool,
the old witch said.
I know you are no ordinary child. I have seen you speak to Lucius Malfoy, watched you frighten off a Dementor, and witnessed Fawkes grant your plea. Anyone with wisdom who saw you before the Wizengamot, by which I mean myself and at most two others, could guess that you had absorbed some portion of Yudohu's shredded soul on the night of his undeath, but subdued it, and turned his knowledge to good ends.
There was a slight pause in the room.
Well, yes, of course,
said Minerva McGonagall. She sighed, slumped a bit in the headmistress's chair.
As Albus clearly knew from the very beginning, but thoughtfully declined to warn me about in any way whatsoever.
Right, Moody said. We knew that. Yep, perfectly obvious. Wasn't confused at all.
I guess that's close enough to the truth, said Harry. So, what's the problem exactly?
The problem,
Amelia Bones said, her voice perfectly even,
is that you are a bubbling, unstable blend of a Hogwarts first year, and you know who.
She paused as though waiting for something.
I'm getting better about that,
Harry said, since she seemed to be waiting on his reply.
Quite rapidly, in fact. More importantly, it's not something Dumbledore didn't know.
The old witch continued.
Giving away your fortune and going into debt to Lucius Malfoy to keep your best friend out of Azkaban, as much as it demonstrates your upstanding moral character, also demonstrates that you cannot corral the Wizengamot. I can see now that you did the right thing for yourself, the thing you had to do to maintain your lease on sanity and hold back your inner darkness. But you also did a thing that Merlin's heir must not do. A sentimental leader can be far worse than a selfish one. Albus, master and servant of a phoenix, was barely survivable. And even he opposed you that day.
Amelia gestured in the direction of Mad-Eye Moody.
Alistair has hardness. He has cunning. He still does not have the talent for government. You, Harry Potter, do not yet have the sternness, the capacity for sacrifice, to direct even the Order of the Phoenix. And being what you are, you must not try to become that person. Not now, not at your age. Align and fuse your divided soul in your own time, if you possibly can. Do not try to be Chief Warlock while you're doing it. If Albus thought that was a good idea, he was crafting a nicer story at the expense of real-world practicality. I do think the man had a problem with that.
Harry's eyes were a bit wide listening to all this.
What exactly do you think is going on in here?
Harry tapped his head just above his ear.
I imagine that inside you is the soul of a boy who remains honest and true, gathering his will to force down the fragment of Voldemort's spirit that tries to consume him, even as it howls at him that he is sentimental and weak. Did you just giggle? Sorry, but seriously, it wasn't ever that bad. More like having a lot of bad habits I need to break.
Him,
said Headmistress McGonagall.
Mr. Potter, I think at the start of this year it was that bad.
Bad habits that chained into and triggered each other. Yes, those are a bit more of a problem.
Harry sighed.
And you, Madam Bones, sorry if I'm wrong about this, but my guess is that you're feeling a bit upset that the line went to an 11-year-old. Not the way you are thinking,
the old witch said calmly.
Though it is natural for you to suspect me, the position of Chief Warlock is not one I will find pleasant, even compared to the horrors of magical law enforcement. Albus persuaded me on the matter, and I would say that I took some convincing. But the truth is that I did not waste his time in an argument I expected to lose. I knew I would hate the task, and I knew I would do it anyway. Minerva says you have some amount of common sense, especially when others remind you of it. Can you really see yourself standing upon the Wizengamot's high dais? Are you sure it is not some remnant of you-know-who that imagines himself suited to the position? Or even desires it at all?
Harry took off his glasses and massaged his forehead. His scar still ached a bit, from the damage he'd done by picking at it yesterday until it bled in a suitably dramatic fashion.
I do have some common sense, and yes, being Chief Warlock sounds like a huge amount of aggravation and a job that, in reality, does not fit me in the tiniest bit. The trouble is, I'm not sure the line of Merlin is just about being Chief Warlock. There's, I suspect that there's weird other stuff that goes along with it, and that Dumbledore meant me to take responsibility for the other stuff, and that the other stuff is possibly quite amazingly important.
"Crap!" Moody said. Then Alistair Moody repeated,
"Crap, kid! Should you even be saying this to us?"
"I don't know," Harry said. "If there's a user manual, I haven't looked at it yet."
"Crap!"
"And if these other matters require sternness and sacrifice?"
Amelia Bones said, still calmly.
"If they test you, as you were tested before the Wizengamot. I am old, Harry Potter, and I am not without knowledge of mysteries. Have you seen how I was able to perceive your own nature at nearly a glance?"
"Amelia," Mad-Eye Moody said. "What would have happened if you'd had to fight you-know-who last night?"
The old witch shrugged.
"I would have died. I expect."
"You'd have lost," said Alistair Moody. "And the boy who lived didn't just take out Voldy. He set it up so that his good friend Hermione Granger came back from the dead at the same time Voldy resurrected himself. There's no way in hell, or double hell, that was an accident. And I don't think it was David's idea either. Amy, the truth is, none of us know what the Keeper of Merlin's legacy has to do. But we're not the right kind of crazy for this crap."
Amelia Bones frowned.
"Alistair, you know I've dealt with strange things before. Dealt with them quite well, in my opinion."
"Yeah, You dealt with the crap so you could get back to real life. You're not the kind of crazy that builds a castle out of the crap and lives there.
Moody sighed.
Amy, on some level you know exactly why Albus had to leave who knows what job to the poor kid.
The old witch's fists clenched on the table.
Do you have any idea of the disaster it would be for Britain? Call me sane, but I cannot accept that outcome. I have worked too long toward this day to see it fall apart now. Now, of all times!
Excuse me,
Headmistress McGonagall said, sounding quite precise and Scottish.
Is there any reason why Mr. Potter cannot simply instruct the Lane that Madam Bones is his regent for the position of Chief Warlock, but not anything having to do with the Department of Mysteries until he comes of age? If Albus could tell the Lane to appoint a regent only until Voldemort's defeat, it is clearly capable of following complex orders.
Slowly, this unexpected hammer-blow of common sense was absorbed by everyone present. Harry opened his mouth to agree to appoint Amelia Bones his regent for Wizengamot-related matters, and then hesitated again.
Harry said. Madam Bones, I would much prefer if you took charge of handling the Wizengamot instead of me.
In that we are agreed, said the old witch. Shall we let it be done?
But...
There was a sort of frustrated dropping back of the others.
What is the problem, Mr. Potter?
Said the headmistress in a voice that indicated she was hoping it was nothing serious.
I think there's a couple of things I might have to do very soon that could... prove politically controversial, and in exchange for handing over the line's political power to Madam Bones, I'm going to want her, cooperation on some things.
Amelia Bones exchanged another long stare with Minerva McGonagall. Then she looked back at Harry Potter.
I am indignant at your request, Amelia Bones said. Your hesitancy has told me that you are weak and unused to bargaining, and will probably fold if I push back.
Harry closed his eyes. Slightly dark-tinged Harry opened them.
All right, Harry said. Let me rephrase. I don't mean to interfere with your work on a day-to-day or even month-to-month basis. But I can't just toss off the final responsibility that Dumbledore left me. I'm not going to owl you bizarre parchments out of nowhere. There can be discussion first. But at some point, I may have to give you an order. If you refuse the order, I might have to take back the line's Wizengamot functions and assume direct control. Can you handle that?
And if I say no,
said the old witch.
Slight the dark tinge. I don't have an alternative to you lined up. I could start by asking Augusta Longbottom, who she thought might be suitable, and work from there. But it may be important that we keep to Dumbledore's plan as much as possible, since I don't know exactly why he did the things he did, and he thought Amelia Bones should be Chief Warlock for a time. I'm not going to pull Merlin's name on you, but... No, strike that. I am going to pull Merlin's name on you. This might or might not be insanely important.
The old witch thought for a time, her eyes going from person to person around the table.
I am not satisfied with this, she said after a time. But the Wizengamot must be called to order soon.
It will do for now."
Slowly, the old witch reached into her robes and took out a short rod of stone. Dark stone. She placed the rod on the table before Harry.
"Take what is yours," she said, "and then do please give it back."
Harry reached out his hand to take it. In the moment that Harry's fingers first touched the dark stone, nothing happened. Well, perhaps Merlin hadn't been given to melodrama. That could explain why his final legacy looked like a small, unassuming dark rod. If that was all that was needed for its function, that would be all that was there. Harry took up the line, frowning at it.
"I'd like to appoint Amelia Bones as my regent for Wizengamot-related functions."
Then, the thought occurring to him that he needed to specify a stopping point to define a regency, Harry added,
"Until I say that I've taken it back."
Then Harry made a face. He'd been hoping for more from the line, but it was just a key to places in the Department of Mysteries where interesting things were kept, or to seals where Merlin and his successors had stashed things that shouldn't be destroyed but ought to be kept from general circulation. Aside from that, the line didn't do much. The line didn't let you bypass the interdict of Merlin either. No, not even if the fate of the galaxy was at stake. Not even if the person seemed sane, had taken an unbreakable vow, and honestly believed the world was about to be destroyed otherwise. Merlin had dreamed of a long run, a world that would last for eons, not just centuries. The world had no reason not to last forever, if the truly dangerous powers were removed and kept gone. Conversely, a single loophole in the safeguards made the world's destruction only a matter of time. Someday, Merlin's line would pass to the wrong person. It could reject the obviously unworthy, but eventually it would pass into hands too subtly flawed for the line to detect. This was inevitable when dealing with human beings, and Harry needed to keep that in mind before he sealed something where future lineholders could retrieve it. The disaster of its inevitable misuse someday needed to be outweighed by its benefits over the next few thousand years. Harry let out a sad, small sigh under his breath.
"Merlin, you idiot."
Thinking that didn't unlock any final safeguards. There wasn't anything currently on fire in the Department of Mysteries, so Harry carefully placed the line back on the table.
"Thank you,"
the old witch said. She picked up the rod of dark stone.
"Do you know how I am to use it to call the Wizengamot to order, or... Oh, never mind, I shall just try striking the podium. That seems obvious enough. To the rest of the country, of course. I am the chief warlock, so far as anyone knows, except us four."
Harry hesitated. Then he imagined the owls he would receive if anyone knew he was allowed to second-guess the chief warlock, and what that would do to Amelia's negotiating power.
Fine.
Amelia tucked the rod back into her robes.
"I will not say it was a pleasure doing business with you, boy who lived, but it could have been much worse. Thank you kindly for that."
Harry was already feeling worried about the exact balance of power here, from the way Madame Bones was acting. The others had, quite logically, deduced that it had been mostly David Munro who'd planned the way to defeat Voldemort, which meant they were still underestimating him. It might take a crisis of some type, with Harry figuring it out successfully for once instead of screwing up, before Amelia Bones started to respect his authority. Or believe in it at all, actually.
So,
Harry said,
any weirdness for me that you would have brought to Dumbledore while he was around?
Amelia looked thoughtful.
"Since you ask, I can think of three things indeed. First, we don't have the faintest notion what ritual was used to sacrifice the Death Eaters and resurrect you-know-who. It corresponds to no known legend, and the magic traces from the ritual have been eradicated. So far as my auras can tell, everyone's heads fell off their necks due to natural causes, except for Walden McNair, who was killed by magical fire after firing a killing curse from his wand. A very mysterious ritual indeed."
She was giving Harry Potter a rather precise look.
Harry considered this, choosing his words carefully. Voldemort had said he'd put up wards, so Harry had been confident of not being observed by time-turned auras, but still...
"I think this is a matter you don't need to investigate too hard, Madam Bones."
The old witch grinned slightly.
"We can't be seen to go easy on the investigation of so many noble deaths, Harry Potter. When I heard retold your particular account of David's last stand, I made certain to send investigators whom I considered reliable in the usual quality of their work. Aura Nobbs and Aura Colon, in fact, who are widely respected outside my department. I found their report to be quite fascinating reading."
Amelia paused.
"There's a possibility that Augustus Rookwood left a ghost."
"Exorcise it before anyone talks to it,"
Harry said, conscious of the sudden hammering of his heart.
"Yes, sir," the old witch said dryly. "I shall disrupt the soul's anchoring a little, and none shall be the wiser when it fails to materialize. The second matter is that there was a still-living human arm found among the Dark Lord's things."
"Bellatrix,"
Harry said. His mind had leaped back, made the connection that ongoing trauma had blurred.
"I think that's Bellatrix Black's arm." Lysarth Lestrange hadn't been named as someone who'd lost a parent.
"Oh, bloody hell. She's still out there, isn't she? Can you use her arm to track her down somehow?"
Amelia Bones had acquired a sour look.
"I see. As I was saying, a still-living human arm was found among the Dark Lord's things, but it proved to be easily incinerated."
"What idiot!"
Harry stopped himself.
No, not an idiot, because immediately destroying dark objects is department policy. Because of past experiences with rings that really should have been dropped into volcanoes immediately, right?"
Moody and Amelia nodded in unison.
"Good guess, son," said Moody.
It might seem literally inevitable that Harry's past stupidity was going to come back and haunt him in some horrible fashion later, but that was no reason not to try subverting the plot.
"I expect you've thought of this already,"
Harry said.
"But the obvious next step is to put out your equivalent of an international bulletin for a thin witch missing her left arm. And add 25,000 galleons pledged from me. Headmistress, it's fine. Please, trust me on this. To whatever reward is being offered."
"Well said,"
the old witch leaned forward slightly.
"The third and final matter... There was one truly puzzling element to last night's events, and I am curious to see what you make of it, Harry Potter. Found among the corpses was the head and the body of Sirius Black."
"What?"
yelled Moody, starting half from his chair.
"I thought he was in Azkaban."
"So he is," said Madam Bones. "We checked that at once. The Azkaban guards reported that Sirius Black was still in his cell. Black's head and body have been transported to the St. Mungo's morgue and show the same cause of death as the other Death Eaters. That is to say, his head spontaneously fell off. I'm also told that Sirius Black is, as of this morning, sitting in the corner of his cell, rocking back and forth with his head between his hands. No other duplicate Death Eaters have been found. Yet.
There was a pause filled with ticking and whooping things as people considered this.
Said Minerva. It's not possible, even by you know whose standards of possibility, is it?
I would have thought so too when I was your age, dear, said Amelia. It is the sixth strangest thing I have ever seen.
You see, son, said Moody, this sort of thing is why nobody, even me, can ever be paranoid enough.
The scarred man tilted his head, looking thoughtfully as his bright blue eye kept ever roving.
Twin brother concealed from the rest of the world? Well, Persia Black gave birth to twins, couldn't bear to kill one. New old Pollux would demand it. Oh, nah, ain't boy in it.
Any ideas, Mr. Potter? Said Amelia Bones. Or is this another matter into which my department should not inquire too closely?
Harry closed his eyes and thought. Sirius Black had hunted down Peter Pettigrew instead of fleeing the country as common sense would have suggested. Black had been found in the middle of the street, surrounded by bodies, laughing. Nothing left of Pettigrew except one finger. Pettigrew had been a spy for the light, not a double agent, but somebody who snuck around and found things out. One of the conspiracy theories about Pettigrew had been that he was an animagus, since he had been good at ferreting out secrets even in his Hogwarts years. Dementors sapped all the magic in their vicinity. Professor Quirrell had said something about a particular type of magic that rearranged flesh like a muggle smith, reshaping metal with hammer and tongs. Harry opened his eyes again.
Was Peter Pettigrew a secret metamorph magus?
Amelia Bones's face changed. She made a single croaking noise and fell backward within her chair.
Yes, in fact,
Minerva said slowly.
Why?
Sirius Black confounded Peter Pettigrew,
Harry's voice explained patiently,
to force him to change shape and pretend to be Black. By the time the confundus wore off, Peter was in Azkaban and couldn't change back. The auras are used to people in Azkaban saying absolutely anything to get out, so they didn't listen while Peter Pettigrew was screaming about it over and over again until his voice wore out.
Even Mad-Eye Moody's face showed the horror then.
In retrospect, said Harry's voice,
which seemed to be operating entirely on automatic,
you should have been suspicious when you managed to get that one Death Eater hauled off to Azkaban without a trial. We thought Malfoy was distracted, whispered the old witch, that he was only trying to save himself. There were other Death Eaters we managed to get then, like Bellatrix.
Harry nodded, feeling like his neck and head were moving on puppet strings.
The Dark Lord's most frantic and devoted servant. A natural nucleus of opposition for anyone who contested Lucius's control of the Death Eaters. You thought Lucius was distracted.
Get him out of there,
said Minerva McGonagall. Her voice rose to a scream.
Get him out of there!
Amelia Bones shoved herself up from the chair, whirled on the flue.
Stop!
Everyone looked at Harry with astonishment, none more than Minerva McGonagall. Something else seemed to have taken over Harry's voice.
There's four things we still need to discuss. An innocent man has been in Azkaban for 10 years, 8 months and 14 days. He can stay there a few minutes longer. That's how urgent these four things are.
You,
whispered Amelia Bones.
You should not try to be this person at your age.
First, I think you should look at the complete police records on every other Death Eater that went to Azkaban while Lucius was distracted. Can you compile that by tonight?
Within the hour,
said Amelia Bones. She looked grey. Harry nodded.
Second, Azkaban is over. You'll need to start preparations now to move the prisoners to Nurmengard or other secure, non-Dementor prisons and to provide treatment for their Dementor exposure.
Aye,
said Amelia. The old witch seemed bent, diminished.
I do not think that even with this scandal, that the remainder of the Wizengamot will bend, and the Dementors must be fed. Not so much as we have fed them, but they must be given some victims, or they'll roam the world, prey on innocence.
It doesn't matter what the Wizengamot says,
Harry said.
Because,
Harry's voice choked.
Because,
Harry took a deep breath, steadied himself. He thought he could see the shape now of the immediate future, could see it stretching out before him like a golden pathway lit with sunlight.
Was this also written in the Book of Time that I must not see? Because if I'm right about what comes next, then some time very soon Hermione Granger, the girl who revived, is going to go to Azkaban and destroy all the Dementors there.
Impossible! Spat Mad-Eye Moody.
Merlin,
whispered Amelia Bones.
Oh, dear Merlin, that's what happened to the Dementor that Dumbledore lost. That's why they're afraid of you. And now her as well.
Her voice trembled.
What is this? What is all of this?
If Hermione believes that death can be defeated, whether or not she could have believed that before, she'll believe it now.
An authorized portkey to Azkaban would be appreciated.
Harry's voice broke again, tears streaming down his cheeks.
She can't die. I have her Horcrux. But Hermione doesn't need to know about that. Not for one more week. If she's willing to risk her own life to end this.
Though, I think she might make her own way there.
Harry,
said Headmistress McGonagall. Harry was crying now, huge, ragged breaths bursting from him. But he didn't stop talking. Somewhere out there, Peter Pettigrew was waiting while Harry cried. Somewhere out there, everyone was waiting while he cried.
Third, somewhere just inside the wards of Hogwarts, in a highly defensible position, but where emergency cases can be portkeyed in from just outside the wards, there's going to be a high-security hospital with very powerful guards that have taken unbreakable vows. I don't care how much gold it takes to pay for the vows. It genuinely does not matter anymore.
And Alistair Moody is going to design the security architecture and go completely overboard on paranoia without being constrained by a budget or sanity or common sense. It only has to open.
Couldn't stop talking to cry.
Harry,
said the headmistress.
Both of them think you've gone mad. They don't know you well enough to know better. You need to slow down and explain.
Instead, Harry reached into his pouch and signed letters with his fingers and lifted out, his fingers straining, a 5-kilo chunk of gold larger than his fist from when he'd been experimenting this morning. It made a heavy thud as it landed on the table. Moody reached over and tapped it with his wand, and then his throat made an incomprehensible sound.
That's your starting budget, Alistair. If you need money right away. Nicholas Flamel didn't make the Philosopher's Stone. He stole it. Dumbledore didn't know the secret history, but Monroe did. Once you know how it works, the stone can do one complete restoration to full health and youth every 234 seconds. 360 people per day, 134,000 healings per year. That should be enough to stop all the wizards everywhere, and all the goblins and house elves and whoever from dying of old age or anything else.
Harry was wiping away tears over and over.
Flamel had more blood on his hands than 100 Voldemorts, for all the people he could have saved and didn't. The whole time, Moody, the Philosopher's Stone could have healed all your scars and given you back your leg, any time Flamel felt like it. Dumbledore didn't know. I'm sure he didn't know.
Harry smiled shakily.
I can't imagine you as a teenage witch, Madam Bones, but I bet it looks good on you. That'll give you more energy for trying to keep the Wizengamot from messing with me. Because if they get the idea that the stone is something they can mess with in any way, attacks, regulate, I don't care, Hogwarts is going to secede from Britain and become its own country. Headmistress, Hogwarts is no longer dependent on the Ministry for Gold, or, for that matter, food. You may reform the educational curriculum at will. I'm thinking we may want to add some more advanced courses soon, especially Muggle studies.
Slow down, said Minerva McGonagall.
Fourth,
Harry said, and then stopped.
Fourth, begin preparations for an orderly takedown of the Statue of Secrecy and to provide magical healing en masse scale to the Muggle world. Those who oppose this agenda in any way may be denied services by the stone.
Harry's lips couldn't move. Not wouldn't. Couldn't. With 6 billion Muggles thinking creatively about how to use magic. Transfiguring antimatter was just one idea. It wasn't even the most destructive idea. There were also black holes and negatively charged strangelets. And if black holes couldn't be transfigured because they didn't already exist as magic defined that, to within some spatial radius, there was just transfiguring lots and lots of nuclear weapons and Black Death Plague that could reproduce before the transfiguration wore off, and Harry hadn't even thought about the problem for 5 minutes, but it didn't matter because he'd already thought of enough. Someone would think of it. Someone would talk. Someone would try it. The probability was as close to certainty as made no difference.
What happened if you transfigured a cubic millimeter of up quarks? Just the up quarks, without any down quarks to bind them. Harry didn't even know. And up quarks were certainly a kind of substance that already existed. All it might take was one single Muggleborn who knew the names of the six quarks deciding to try it. That could be the clock ticking down to the prophesied end of the world. Harry would have tried to deny the thought, rationalize it away. He couldn't do that either. It wasn't a thing Harry Potter would do. Like water flowing downhill, Harry Potter would take no chances when it came to not destroying the world.
"Fourth,"
said Amelia Bones, who was looking like she'd been hit repeatedly in the face with a planet.
"What comes fourth?"
"Never mind," said Harry. His voice did not break. He did not fold over sobbing. There were still lives he could save, and those took precedence.
"Never mind. Chief Warlock Bones, I've given the regency of the Wizengamot into your hands. Please use that position to announce internationally that the stone's healing power will soon be made available to all, and that meanwhile, all dying patients are to be kept alive at any cost, no matter what magic is required to do it. That announcement is your absolute priority. When you have done that, you may rescue Peter Pettigrew and tell your old department to begin preparations for shutting down Azkaban. Then, please have someone prepare a full list of imprisoned Death Eaters and what was said at their trials and whether Lucius seemed strangely uninterested in defending them. Thank you. That's all."
Amelia Bones turned without another word and dashed into the flue like it was her own self that was on fire.
"And someone,"
Harry said, his voice breaking again now that it was all set in motion, and crying wasn't costing time, though the vast majority of total lives at stake had turned out not to be savable just yet.
"Someone has... someone tell Remus Lupin!"
Chapter 120. Something to Protect. Draco Malfoy. The boy sat in an office near to where the once deputy headmistress had held court. His tears had run dry hours ago. Now there was only the waiting to see what would become of him. The orphan ward of Hogwarts, whose life and happiness lay in the hands of his family's enemies. The boy had been called to this room, and he had come because there was nothing else to do and nowhere else to go. Vincent and Gregory had left his side, called back by their mothers for their father's hurried funerals. Perhaps the boy should have gone with them, but he could not bring himself to do so. He would not have been able to act the part of a Malfoy. The feeling of emptiness that filled him up was so profound that it left no room even for pretended courtesy. Everyone was dead. His father was dead, and his godfather, Mr. McNair, and his fallback godfather, Mr. Avery. Even Sirius Black, his mother's cousin, had somehow managed to die. And the last remnant of House Black was no friend to any Malfoy. Everyone was dead. There came a knock upon the office's door, and then, when the boy made no reply, the door opened, revealing...
"Go away,"
Draco Malfoy said to the boy who lived. He couldn't muster any force in the words.
"I will soon,"
Harry Potter said as he stepped into the room.
"But there's a decision to be made, and only you can make it."
Draco turned his head toward the wall because just looking at Harry Potter took more energy than he had left in him.
"You have to decide," Harry said. "What happens to Draco Malfoy after this? I don't mean that in an ominous way. No matter what, you're still going to grow up to be the rich heir of a noble and most ancient house. The thing is..."
Harry's voice was wavering now.
"The thing is, there's a horrible truth you don't know, and I keep thinking that if you knew, you'd tell me not to be your friend any more. And I don't want to stop being your friend, but to just never tell you, and always maintain that lie so I can go on being your friend, I can't do that. It's also wrong. I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be manipulating you. I've hurt you too much already."
"Then stop trying to be my friend. You're no good at it anyway."
The words rose up into Draco's consciousness and were rejected from his lips. He felt like he'd mostly lost Harry already. From the games Harry had played with their friendship, the lies and manipulations. And yet the thought of going back to Slytherin alone, maybe without Vincent and Gregory if their mothers terminated the arrangement, Draco didn't want to do that. He didn't want to go back to Slytherin and live out his life among only people who'd agreed to be sorted into Slytherin House. Draco was barely sensible enough to remember how many of his real friends were also friends with Harry, that Padma was a Ravenclaw and even Theodore was a chaotic lieutenant. All that remained of Malfoy House was a tradition now, and that tradition said it wasn't clever to tell the war's victor to go away and stop trying to be friends with you.
"All right," Draco said emptily. "Tell me."
"That's what I'm going to do," Harry said. "And then the headmistress will come in after I leave and seal away your last half hour of memory. But before then, knowing the whole truth, you'll get to decide whether you still want to be involved with me."
Harry's voice was shaking.
"According to the records I was reading through before I came here, the story really began in 1926 with the birth of a half-blood wizard named Tom Morfin Riddle. His mother died in childbirth, and he grew up in a Muggle orphanage until his Hogwarts letter was brought to him by Professor Dumbledore."
The boy who lived continued speaking, words that slammed into what was left of Draco's mind like falling houses.
"The Dark Lord had been a half-blood. He'd never believed in blood purity for a fraction of a second. Tom Riddle had come up with the idea of Lord Voldemort as a bad joke. The Death Eaters had been meant to lose to David Munro so Munro could take over. After giving up on that, Tom Riddle had gone on playing Voldemort instead of actually trying to win, because he'd liked bossing the Death Eaters around. Voldemort used me to try to frame Father for my attempted murder, then used me again to go after the Philosopher's Stone."
Draco couldn't remember that part, but he'd already been told that he'd been used as a pawn alongside Professor Sprout, and that no charges would be filed. And then, the last horror.
"You,"
whispered Draco Malfoy.
"You.
I'm the one who killed your father, and all the other Death Eaters last night. They'd been told to open fire on me the moment I did anything, so I had to kill them in order to have a chance at dealing with Voldemort, who was a danger to the entire world."
Harry Potter's voice was strained.
I didn't think about you and Theodore and Vincent and Gregory, but if I had, I'd have done it anyway. My mind managed not to realize until afterwards that Mr. White was Lucius. But if I'd realized, I still wouldn't have risked leaving him alive, in case he knew wandless magic. The thought occurred to me long before that it would be pretty convenient, in terms of the political landscape, for all the Death Eaters to suddenly die. I always thought that the Death Eaters were horrible people, much more strongly than I ever let on to you since the first day we met. But if your father hadn't been there, and I'd had a button that could kill him remotely, I wouldn't have pressed the button just for political reasons. The way I feel about what I've done, and whether there's remorse, well, there's a part of me that's screaming in generic horror about having killed anyone, and another part that says that from a moral standpoint, the Death Eaters signed away their lives on the day they signed up with Voldemort. They pointed their wands at me first, blah, blah, and so on. But right now, I just feel sick about what I've done to you. Again, I feel like... Harry Potter's voice wobbled a bit. Everything I do only hurts you. For all my good intentions, that you've only ever lost things from being around me. So, if you tell me to stay away entirely from Draco Malfoy after this, then I will. And if you want me to try to be your friend for real this time, without ever trying to manipulate you again, without ever using you again or risking hurting you, then I will. I swear I will. The next Lord Malfoy was crying, openly, in front of his enemy, decorum and composure abandoned, because he didn't have anyone left for whose sake he could keep it. A lie. A lie. Everything had been a lie. It was all lies, piled on top of lies. Lies, lies, lies. You should die, Draco forced out. You should die for having killed Father. The words only filled him with more emptiness, but they had to be said. Harry Potter just shook his head. And if that's not an option? You should hurt! Harry only shook his head again. The boy who lived pressed the Lord Malfoy for his decision. The Lord Malfoy refused to give it. He couldn't say it. Couldn't bring himself to say it either way. He didn't want the war's victor and their mutual friends to abandon him, and he wasn't going to give Harry the absolution he wanted either. So, Draco Malfoy refused to answer, and then the time of that self's memory ended. The boy sat in an office near to where the once deputy headmistress had held court. His tears had run dry hours ago. Now there was only the waiting to see what would become of him, the orphan ward of Hogwarts, whose life and happiness lay in the hands of his family's enemies. The boy had been called to this room, and he had come because there was nothing else to do, and nowhere else to go. Vincent and Gregory had left his side, called back by their mothers for their father's hurried funerals. Perhaps the boy should have gone with them, but he could not bring himself to do so. He would not have been able to act the part of a Malfoy. The feeling of emptiness that filled him up was so profound that it left no room even for lies.
everyone was dead. Everyone was dead, and it had all been futile from the beginning. There was a knock upon the office door, and then, after a polite pause, it opened to reveal Headmistress McGonagall, dressed much as she had dressed when she was a professor.
"Mr. Malfoy,"
his family's victorious enemy said,
"please, come with me."
Listlessly, Draco rose up and followed her out of the office. Seeing Harry Potter waiting beside her gave him some pause, but then his mind simply shut it out.
"Here's the last thing," Harry Potter said. "I found it in a folded parchment whose outside said that it was the last weapon to be used against House Malfoy, telling me not to read any further until the whole war hung in the balance. I didn't want to tell it to you before because I thought it might prejudice your decision unfairly. If you were a good person who never killed or lied, but you had to do one or the other, which would be worse?"
Draco ignored him and continued in Headmistress McGonagall's company, leaving Harry behind, looking sadly after. They came to the headmistress's old office, where she lit her flue fire with a wave of her wand, said to the green flame,
"Gringotts Travel Office,"
and stepped through after a firm glance in his direction. For lack of any other option, Draco Malfoy followed. She lay in bed, feeling more listless than usual that morning, awoken too early, with the sun just beginning to rise, though the direct sunlight was blocked by the skyscrapers that shadowed her house. A faint tinge of hangover gnawed at her temples, dried her mouth. She tried to be sparing with the drink, though she didn't know why she bothered. But yesterday she'd felt even more depressed than usual, like she'd lost something, somehow. Not for the first time, not for the 100th time, she thought about moving to Adelaide, to Perth, maybe to Perth Amboy, if that was what it took. She always had the sense there was somewhere else she ought to be. But while she could live a comfortable life on the payments the insurance company made to her, she couldn't afford luxuries. She couldn't pay to go gallivanting around the world looking for some place that fit her unsatisfied sense of belonging. She'd watched the TV for long enough. She'd rented enough travelogues to know that nowhere the VCR showed her gave her any more sense of rightness than Sydney. She'd felt frozen, stopped in time, ever since the traffic accident that had stolen her memories. Not just of a dead family that meant nothing to her now, but memories like how a stove worked. She suspected, no, she knew, that whatever her heart was waiting for, whatever key needed to turn inside her to make her life begin moving again, it was one more thing she'd lost to that runaway minivan. She thought about that almost every morning, trying to guess what she was missing. Missing. Missing from her life and mind. Somebody rang her doorbell. She groaned, turning her head far enough to look at the LED alarm clock at the side of her bed. 6:31, it said, with the AM dot lit. Seriously? Well, that idiot could wait while she staggered out of bed at her own pace, then. Stagger out of bed she did, ignoring the doorbell as it rang again, as she ducked into the bathroom and dressed herself. She clambered down the stairs, ignoring the ever-nagging sense that someone else ought to be answering her door for her.
"Who's there?"
she called to the closed door. The door had a peephole, but it was fogged over.
"Are you Nancy Mason?"
came a woman's voice, speaking in a precise Scottish accent.
"Yes?"
she said cautiously.
"You're Nui,"
spoke the Scottish voice, and Nancy leapt back in shock as a flash of light came from the door and hit her and... Nancy swayed, putting a hand to her forehead. Flashes of light, just going through doors and hitting people. That was... that was... that wasn't particularly surprising.
"Would you please open the door?"
said the Scottish woman's voice.
"The war is over, and your memory should be returning shortly. There's someone here who ought to see you."
"My memories?" Nancy's head was already feeling clogged, like she was about to start hacking something out of her brain, but she managed to reach out and yank the door open. There in front of her was a woman dressed as a perfectly normal witch, from black robes to tall pointed hat. And standing beside her, a boy with short white blonde hair and wearing perfectly normal dark robes trimmed in green, staring at her with his jaw dropped and eyes wide, and beginning to fill with tears. Green-trimmed robes and white blonde hair. Something warm stirred in her memory. She felt her heart rising into her throat as she realized that the thing that she'd been looking for these past 10 years might be right in front of her this very instant. Somewhere, deep inside her, ice was cracking around her heart, the piece of her that had been stopped for so long, preparing to move once more. The boy was staring at her, his mouth working soundlessly. A mysterious name came into her mind, rose to her lips.
"Lucius,"
she whispered. Chapter 121. Something to Protect Severus Snape. A somber mood pervaded the headmistress's office. Minerva had returned after dropping off Draco and Narcissa, Nancy, at St. Mungo's, where the Lady Malfoy was being examined to see if a decade living as a muggle had done any damage to her health. And Harry had come up to the headmistress's office again, and then not been able to think of priorities. There was so much to do, so many things that even Headmistress McGonagall didn't seem to know where to start, and certainly not Harry. Right now, Minerva was repeatedly writing words on parchment and then erasing them with a hand wave, and Harry had closed his eyes for clarity. Was there any next first thing that needed to happen? There came a knock upon the great oaken door that had been Dumbledore's office, and the headmistress opened it with a word. The man who entered the headmistress's office appeared worn. He had discarded his wheelchair but still walked with a limp. He wore black robes that were simple, yet clean and unstained. Over his left shoulder was slung a knapsack of sturdy grey leather set with silver filigree that held 4 green pearl-like stones. It looked like a thoroughly enchanted knapsack, one that could contain the contents of a muggle house. One look at him, and Harry knew. Headmistress McGonagall sat frozen behind her new desk. Severus Snape inclined his head to her.
"What is the meaning of this?"
said the headmistress, sounding heart-sick, like she had known upon a glance, just like Harry had.
"I resign my position as the potions master of Hogwarts," the man said simply. I will not stay to draw my last month's salary. If there are any students who have been particularly harmed by me, you may use the money for their benefit.
He knows.
The thought came to Harry, and he couldn't have said in words just what the potion master now knew, except that it was very clear that Severus knew it.
Severus?
Headmistress McGonagall began. Her voice sounded hollow.
Professor Severus Snape, you may not realize how difficult it is to find potions masters who can safely teach Muggleborns, or professors sharp enough to keep Slytherin House in any semblance of order.
Again, the man inclined his head.
I think it need not be said to you, headmistress, but I recommend in the strongest possible terms that the next head of Slytherin be nothing like me.
Severus, you only did as Albus told you to do. You could stay on and act differently.
Headmistress, Harry said. His own voice seemed also hollow, and Harry wondered at it, for he hadn't known Severus Snape that well. If he wants to go, I think you should let him go. Dumbledore was using him. Maybe not exactly the way Professor Quirrell thought. Maybe it was prophecy, rather than sabotaging Slytherin. But Dumbledore was still using him. There were things that could have been said long ago to Severus, to free him. It's clear why Dumbledore didn't risk that, but still, Severus wasn't being used kindly. Even his blindness and grief were being used, the way he didn't grasp the consequences of his actions as potions master.
It is well to find you here, Mr. Potter,
Severus said.
There is unfinished business between us.
Harry didn't know what to say, so he just nodded. Severus seemed to be having some difficulty speaking, as he stood before the two of them with the grey knapsack on his shoulder. Finally, he seemed to find the words he had come to speak.
Your mother, Lily, she was...
I know,
Harry said through the thickness of his throat.
You don't have to say it.
Lily was a fine, upstanding witch, Mr. Potter. I would not have you think otherwise from any words I said to you.
Severus?
Said Minerva McGonagall, looking as shocked as if she had been bitten by her own shoes. The former potions master kept his eyes on Harry.
More than one bar lay between myself and Lily, most notably my ill-advised attempts to curry favour with the purebloods of my house. If I made it sound like one mistake upon a muddy field ended it all, if I pretended that she had no reason but shallowness not to love me, I hope your books have also told you why fools may say such things.
They did,
Harry said. He was looking at the fine grey knapsack on Severus Snape's left shoulder, unable to meet the potions master's eyes.
They did.
However,
the former potions master continued,
I'm afraid I have nothing more to say about your father than what I've already told you.
Severus!
The former potions master seemed to have eyes only for Harry.
The dark mark upon my arm is not dead, nor is the prophecy fulfilled by that story you recounted before the crowd. How did you destroy all but a remnant of the Dark Lord?
Harry hesitated.
I obliterated most of his memories and...
sealed him, I guess is how wizards say it. Even if the seal breaks, he won't come back as himself.
Severus frowned briefly and then shrugged.
I suppose that is acceptable.
Professor Snape,
Harry said, because this too was now his responsibility.
The Order of the Phoenix owes you for your services rendered. I'm in an excellent position to repay it, both financially and magically. Just in case you want to start your next life in a position of wealth, or with better hair, or something.
Strange words to say to such as me,
the former potions master said in a soft drawl.
I went to the Dark Lord, intending to sell him the prophecy in exchange for Lily's love becoming mine, by whatever darkness was required to achieve it. That is hardly something to be forgiven lightly. And then, in the years after, when I was a potions master, that you experienced yourself. Do you think my service to the Order of the Phoenix has repaid all my sins?
People are always broken,
Harry said, though the word stuck in his throat.
They always make mistakes. At least, you try to repay them.
Perhaps,
said the former potions master.
My final duty was to fail in guarding the stone, to be struck down. This I have done, and I survived it, which I never expected to do.
Severus was leaning against the door through which he had entered, taking his weight off his left leg.
I would not have thought to ask for your forgiveness. But since you offer it so freely, I will accept with thanks. From this day on, I wish to take less unkindly ways, and I think that is best done by starting over.
Tears glistened on Minerva McGonagall's nose and cheeks. When she spoke, her voice was without hope.
Surely you can start over inside Hogwarts?
Severus shook his head.
Too many students would remember me as the evil potions master. No, Minerva, I will go someplace new and take a new name and find someone new to love.
Severus Snape,
Harry said, because it was his responsibility to say it.
Has all your will been done?
Lily's killer is vanquished, the man said. I am content.
The headmistress lowered her head.
Be well, Severus,
she whispered.
I do have one last piece of advice, Harry said. If you want it.
What is it? Said Severus Snape.
Ruminating about the past can contribute to depression. You have my blanket permission to just never think about your past. Ever. You shouldn't think that it's your responsibility to Lily to bear your guilt for her, or anything like that. Just keep your mind on your future, and whatever new people you meet.
I shall take your wisdom into consideration,
Severus said neutrally.
Also, try a different brand of hair shampoo.
A wry grin crossed Severus's face, and Harry thought it might have been, for the first time, that man's true smile.
Drop dead, Potter.
Harry laughed. Severus laughed. Minerva was sobbing. Without saying anything else, the free man took a pinch of flue powder and cast it into the office's fireplace,
and strode into the green flame, whispering something that nobody caught. And that was the last that anyone ever heard of Severus Snape. Chapter 122. Something to Protect. Hermione Granger. And it was evening, and it was morning, the last day, June 15th, 1992. The beginning light of morning, the pre-dawn before sunrise, was barely brightening the sky. To the east of Hogwarts, where the sun would rise, that faintest tinge of grey made barely visible the hilly horizon beyond the Quidditch stands. The stone terrace platform where Harry now sat would be high enough to see the dawn beyond the hills below. He had asked for that when he was describing his new office. Harry was currently sitting cross-legged on a cushion, chilly pre-morning breezes stirring over his exposed hands and face. He had ordered the house elves to bring up the hand-glittered throne from his previous office as General Chaos, and then he'd told the elves to put it back, once it had occurred to Harry to start worrying about where his tastes in decorations had come from, and whether Voldemort had once possessed a similar throne. Which, itself, wasn't a knockdown argument. It wasn't like sitting on a glittery throne to survey the lands below Hogwarts was unethical, in any way Harry's moral philosophy could make out. But Harry had decided that he needed to take time and think it through. Meanwhile, simple cushions would do well enough. In the room